Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Monday morning. 9:14 is the time. Roundtable panel is in session. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Sarah Rogerson is here from Albany Law. We have political consultant and lobbyist Libby Post here. Investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo is also here. And WAMC's Alan Shartok is with us this morning. Everybody have a good weekend.
Delightful.
We did.
Yeah.
How was the march, Sarah?
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was really, really great. I was just saying about 50% men and women. There were I would say just, as, well, maybe not 50-50, but there were a lot of men there.
And that was on Saturday?
It was on Saturday.
Before the snow flew.
Before the snow. Yep. That would, and yes. Snow came late.
Now, in New York City, that's right, the snow moved up north. But in New York City, the snow was quite pronounced as the march was going on. And you should have seen, as I did, the elan, the spirit that existed among the people who were there. They weren't at all bothered by the snow.
Well, you know, parts of the region got hit pretty good, but around the capital region, it was a lot of nothing.
Yeah.
Not much at all, so.
Sounds like you're complaining.
No, it's good. It's good with me. The email address here is panel@wamc.org, and since it's Monday, we'll give you the full list of rules. Keep your letters brief, to the point, on topic. No links, no attachments, please. No abbreviations if you can, and do proofread at least once before you hit send, one per day per customer. panel@wamc.org. Well, New York Times today.
Wow.
Yeah, how about,
yay.
In a break with convention, the editorial board has chosen to endorse two separate Democratic candidates for president, Amy Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren. Has this ever happened before?
No.
No,
it has not. No. Both two endorsements. The timing is unusual. The way they conducted the interviews, they had everybody come in and did long interviews with each one of them. That became stories in the day, so everybody got a fair, a fair take at it. It wasn't just the one person who got the endorsement, and it's two women. And I can't wait to hear from our listeners about the Bernie bashing.
Yeah, I think it was like 12 hours of interview.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think
very extensive.
You can see them on The Weekly, which is apparently the New York Times streaming television
show.
Yeah,
they did transcripts of it. They did stories on it. It's quite extensive. So it really is in-depth looks at each of the candidates. And then in this latest one, they also did some summarizing. For example, despite how far apart they are in many areas, mostly they're a lot alike. It pointed out all the similarities and how progressive overall the Democrats were. Even if the most moderate one gets in, it's still way more progressive than we've ever seen in the White House.
And that's thanks to Bernie in large part, I would say.
They say that.
And I think to Warren, too. I mean, Warren and Bernie's politics are very similar. It's really about how they present them and how people respond to them.
Well, it was personal stuff that made them move away from Bernie. He's old and sick.
Right,
that
yes,
was that was the
what he sounds like.
He's old and sick. He's 79 and he had a heart attack.
Well,
he's also
you're getting into very
no. I do agree with that, but that is what the New York Times
is. That
said.
Is that fair game? You think for an editorial
Absolutely.
Board to say that?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
Sure. Of course
sure.
It is.
Well,
and they brought up the age of other people too, but he has the double whammy.
But
of,
also
his does not compromise
right.
That. It's his way, no other way will
highway.
Work, and if you don't do it my way, it isn't going to work. And they said, we don't need to exchange a Trump for Bernie.
A Trump.
It's the same thing.
I mean, they're very similar in that way. And I'm just wondering...
Well, but not in their...
Not in their politics, values. But... No, not in their politics or values, but personality in certain respects, in politicking, in certain respects. I would never say, and so hear this loud and clear, Bernie people, I would never say that personality-wise, they were the same.
Nope.
But they have certain, they're very black and white. Both
well,
of them
me,
are very black
Well, let me just ask you this, just to clarify for my own personal edification.
Yes, dear.
When you see... You know, Trump making the case that, look, I represent who I am, and that's it, and I'm moving forward, and that's who I am. Of course, most of us reject that because it's very negative and it's awful. Nevertheless, Bernie offers something different. Bernie says, these are the things I believe in, and I'm not going to deviate from those things. And doesn't that make him, a man to be admired?
It does not make him a good governor. Governance is about talking with the other side and reaching a compromise, something that no one is completely happy with, but you move forward.
Right. It might make him a good orator. It might make him a good senator, perhaps, but it doesn't necessarily make him the right person to be the chief executive of our country in the next 4 years. I think, how's that?
It's not good.
Sorry.
Wow.
You know, I still think I might be in Alan's camp on this one. I think I don't have a problem with Bernie as a candidate for president, and I will absolutely support, as I always have, whoever the nominee is.
Agree with that.
And Bernie has been incredibly effective at benchmarking the conversation among Democrats and Republicans. He's moved the country forward in a lot of different ways through his rhetoric and his lack of a willingness to compromise. So. I guess you're saying there's a place and time for that, and we have an issue with electability, and we're really all playing for the independence. But he was an independent for a very long time.
Yes, he was. He was.
Well, what I'm interested in is whether the New York Times gets to call the election. You know, they're a powerful group, of course.
They never have.
Yeah. Endorsements on newspapers are incredibly ineffective. If you remember, Trump it was unprecedented and amazing. No, there were actually three in the end. Three newspapers in the whole country, and magazines like Atlantic, who had not ever endorsed a president in 150 years, came out and said, don't elect him. And it's still, you know, he still won.
Yeah, I was almost nervous when I saw last night.
Me too.
Because I thought this might actually hurt both of them.
Yep.
Well, we'll see what the impact is going to be in Iowa. And my question is, does the New York Times endorse routinely before the Iowa caucuses, or do they wait?
I was fascinated by the last line in the editorial, which said, may the better
woman win. Yes, that was very nice.
And I wondered how much of this was really because they thought, as I do, it's time for a woman to be president of the United States.
Do you?
I do. Always have.
I thought one interesting paragraph in this editorial, choosing who should face off against Mr. Trump also means acknowledging that Americans are being confronted with three models for how to govern this country, not two. Democrats must decide which of their two models would be most compelling for the American people and best suited for repairing the republic. My question for you, Alan, is, and I've asked this before, does the more... I don't want to say radical, but the more extreme tear it down view on the left and start again, does that sell? Can you win a general election with that?
Well, that's an interesting question. Nobody thought that they could win Donald Trump could win an election. He was too far outside the poll. He couldn't win. Now we have the specter of Bernie. Now, by the way, I'm not arguing Bernie here for you. I'm just simply saying, when I think about this, I say, well, you know what? Bernie offers much on the other side of what Trump was offering. Trump was offering a despicable view of America and the people who make up their minds here. But Bernie is saying it's time to do all of these things. It's time. I wrote the Medicare for All bill. And so it may well be that Americans didn't want the namby-pamby that they perceived with Hillary Clinton. Whether it was true or not, that was the perception, probably why she lost. And here's a guy who says, I have a clear view.
Not probably she lost why she lost. We can't let that go.
Comey.
Well, yeah. No, I agree with that.
It was only 70,000 votes.
No, I know. She got 3 million electoral more votes.
Not because she was perceived as namby-pamby.
No.
Well, I don't know. I don't think Hillary was the candidate who could have brought it off. Tell you the truth, but I like what the Times said, and I certainly think this country needs to have a woman president sooner rather than later. And I just don't know that they're doing what they should be doing in these polls.
Do you have a favorite between the two?
I think, not knowing enough, but I think, well, Roselle just called me and she said, because, you know, I had this experience where Warren came up and kissed me. And she said, now, Alan, you got to be for her because you can go around and brag you were kissed by the president.
And this is subjective. It seemed to me in reading this that the editorial board, while saying, okay, it's Amy or Elizabeth, was leaning toward Elizabeth. Now, this is just the way I read this.
Really?
Yeah.
I took it the opposite way. They had Klobuchar is first. They wrote about her first. She was she's the moderate wing of the party. That's interesting because I said which one did they like better?
They wrote about Warren first.
Yeah, they did. But her picture, you know, if you look at the picture, she's on
the two pictures.
Yeah, the two
she's
pictures.
On the
she's
left.
First.
Well, what about you, Rosemary? You're always interesting in terms of who your preference is among.
Oh no, I could be very happy with either of them.
But
either
that's right? A cop out. I mean, is there one?
Well, if I had to pick it, and I thought she could win, it would be Elizabeth Warren in a minute, in a heartbeat. But I don't think I think she is less electable than. I'm worried about. I don't think I've said it repeatedly. I don't think a woman could win. I think that there's too much of a backlash still, and I don't see that happening. So, I'm trying to say I would vote for any Democrat first of all, even Bernie, who I probably dislike the most.
Couple questions about Klobuchar here. One about the editorial in itself.
Yeah.
Was anybody surprised to see the reference to the alleged difficult nature that she?
No.
Yes, at the
as
thing
a leader
about,
of her staff.
I wasn't surprised.
Glad they brought it up because it is an issue, and she keeps getting it. You know,
it's an issue because she's a woman.
Exactly. Look at Trump.
You know, right.
Look at Cuomo.
Trump. Right. It's an issue because she's a woman and she doesn't.
Yeah, they're all men can be.
I mean, look, I've worked for women legislators, one in particular who was a nightmare. So it's not like women can't be difficult either. However, when men do it, it's being decisive. It's being knowing what they want. It's, you know, being clear. It's not settling. And when women do it, it's being the B word.
Yeah, they put Clinton. Clinton was the example that they drew, which I thought was really an interesting editorial choice to remind the reader that Bill Clinton and other presidents were known to be quote-unquote difficult with their staff.
Joe Biden is known to be difficult.
Biden was in there too, yeah.
They're all difficult.
And yet the image, and again, subjective view here, but the image of Clinton and the image of Biden among the public is one of, okay, this is a fairly affable, professional person.
Jovial, yeah, and Clinton's been romanticized.
Okay, and so my question is, does it matter?
What Clinton?
Bill.
Okay, and what did that mean by romanticized?
A lot of women in America have a crush on him.
Still?
Yes.
My question is, does it matter?
Really?
Does it matter whether you're tough with your staff to the general public who is going to do the voting? I say probably not.
No. No, but I think it's important to mention it in terms of coalition building. And I think the point is that you being president means working with multiple teams of people, unless you're breaking it, like Trump.
Right.
I think the public, however, looks at it as a stand-in for something else. Like, if you don't like Hillary, that's all right.
No?
That I'm sorry. She's
that's
a witch.
That's all right.
She's a witch.
We tend to say the B word around here.
Yeah. Okay, we can do it?
Sorry.
You
all
can say the B word. You don't say the word.
You just say
B word.
They would say that about her as an excuse for other things that they don't like about Hillary.
And that's what they do to all women.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the way it is. It's just the way it is, in terms of the misogyny that dictates our political discourse.
But I think the intent of the editorial is to endorse. It's an endorsement. Mm-hmm. So the point isn't to detract from her candidacy. And I think that's why they wrote it the way that they did, because it was well reported.
If anything, it adds to her candidacy and it'll give her a bump. It'll give her a
push. That was my other question about Klobuchar. Given where she is in the polling, still among the top six, let's say, but back
Hello.
Further in the pack. Does she get any traction from this?
She'll get something,
yeah.
It's hard for me to think that she will, because newspaper endorsements overall are not widely read. And she's in Iowa. They're not big New York Times readers out there, I think.
Well, no, but it's money. The presidential race itself,
money.
Will she come up in the polls? And I'm going to predict she does a little bit. I think
this will help her raise money.
Yeah, sure.
Well, the money I see, it's just endorsements or a bump in the poll. I'm not quite seeing yet. I think it takes more than the New York Times, or the New York Times would have more power than it does.
Well, it is interesting, as this country goes forward and newspapers are failing and all of that, that the Times is the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Times is the one, and it gains more and more power because of that. So,
Trump will use this too, because to them, the New York Times is the establishment.
Yeah,
he looked at his crowd list. Mainstream, lamestream, all those stupid words they use, and that's
the failing New York Times.
Exactly.
Let's not forget that.
Let's not forget that. That old stayed.
And you know their subscription rate skyrocketed. As did the Washington Post.
Yep. Yeah, but failing sounds so good, you know, and he never lets the truth get in the way of a good nickname.
By the Washington Post, by the way, has re-upped the number of lies. And, you know, it's huge now. Mm-hmm. They've been counting lies all the time.
Yeah, it's over 10,000.
No, I think it was 10,000.
Oh, it's over 15,000. Yeah.
Well, the email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Only about 30 seconds, 45 seconds before we go to break. Any takeaways from the march, Sarah Rogerson, that you want to share with us in 30 seconds?
I was impressed by the number of young people there. It's been written up in the local papers. I was impressed by their thoughtfulness. I really loved seeing it was very intergenerational and very multiracial in Schenectady. And that's important because a lot of what I was talking about was connecting immigrant justice to racial justice. And speaking about even in our own communities, we remain segregated and sort of, you know, end up in this fear-mongering that comes from the top of our government, that it's most important in our local neighborhoods not to, you know, to resist that and to come together and to fight hate and bigotry in all of its forms against women, Jewish folk, you know, black and brown people, everyone.
Yeah, let's take a break right there. Our panel today, Sarah Rogerson from Albany Law School, Libby Post is here, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. You, of course, can join us with a quick email to panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org is the email address. We'll break for news, and then we'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Monday morning. 9:34 is the time, and it's the Roundtable panel today. We have Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post, Sarah Rogerson, and Alan Shartok. You can join us with an email to panel@wamc.org.
And here they are. Debbie says, third party time. Oh, brother. It seems as if this is the perfect time for third-party candidate. The moderates in both parties are available. Thoughts?
And let's just re-elect.
Yeah, just let's put Trump in right now. Trump. Skip the whole election.
Right. That's exactly what will happen. And Tulsi Gabbard is talking about doing something like that.
She is? I thought she had said no, she would not do that.
I haven't read that, but that would be lovely.
Anybody else on that?
No.
Third party is a disaster. I remember having the fight of my life with Ralph Nader on that very issue. What can I tell you? Rich says, candidates, I think Bernie is too strident to win. Rich in Amherst.
Oh, good.
That's Rosemary's
You're not
point.
Alone.
Kitty says, crowd size at New York City Women's March. Hello, Roundtable. My husband and I were very frustrated to hear one of your guests say there were hundreds of people at the Women's March on Saturday in New York City. Let's stop right there.
Okay.
Because I didn't hear that. I did hear Sarah, who spoke to the Schenectady rally, say there were hundreds of people.
Yeah, hundreds in Schenectady. Met several hundred. I would be surprised if it topped 1,000, but it very well could have. I think the confusion comes from we went right over to talking to Alan about the New York City Women's March. What were the numbers at the New York City Women's March, do you suppose,
Alan?
Well,
I don't know, but I can tell you there were thousands.
There you go.
Okay. Thousands. So we've settled that.
We were at the Uptown March, and while I don't know exactly how many thousands of people were there, it was definitely in the thousands and not the hundreds. That's correct.
Okay.
And I was there, too. And nobody said hundreds.
Well, I think there was just confusion because.
Put it this way, take it back.
All right.
All right. So then Maureen said, bashing, good morning, panel. With all the vicious dialogue that we have endured in Congress recently, must you enjoy and welcome bashing of candidates? Let us recognize how the conversation has changed. Thanks. Parenthesis, I'm putting this in, Rosemary, to Bernie Sanders. You said that earlier, didn't you?
I have nothing to say.
I said what I said.
Sometimes you wish this was a TV show.
Yeah, the pregnant pauses are...
And the looks, it's very impressive.
Kevin says, Bernie is right of FDR. Bernie Sanders is to the right of FDR in many ways, and he was the most popular president ever. What are you talking about when you call him a radical or claim that he would be unpopular, Kevin?
Who said that? We didn't say he was a radical or would be unpopular. He will, however, be presented by the Trump assassins as a communist.
That's right.
And I do know what a socialist is. In fact, I like socialism. But he will not be presented that way. He will have a huge battle. Mm-hmm. He has never faced it because Trump has always and continues to use him as someone with whom to batter Hillary and Democrats.
So don't you think that the president, I call him that, despite the fact that my tongue gets caught in my mouth.
The orange menace.
Would love Sanders to be the candidate?
Yes, I do think that.
Yeah. Okay, and Justin says, New York Times article. So many times Bernie Sanders has reached across the aisle to sponsor legislation. So many times Bernie has stood unwavering, making the right answer that stood the test of time. We do need a woman president, but if the best candidate isn't the woman, and that doesn't mean we regress, but neglecting the candidate whose decisions have stood the test of time and picked the best woman. Can we please stop kicking the can down the road on change we need? And that's from Justin.
What?
Well, I think that these women embody the change that we need. So I hear Justin on not counting Bernie out, though. And I think everybody so far has said they will vote whomever the nominee is.
Well, I got a letter this weekend from somebody who has a young son in early 20s saying he and his friends will not vote for anybody if Bernie is not the candidate.
Yeah, that's the sentiment that I still am bitter, as are many Hillary supporters, very bitter about.
And Bernie supporter Sarah Silverman has been piping up and saying, because she came, you'll remember, she was invited to speak at the Democratic National Convention to sort of try to calm the crowds at the convention. It didn't work out too well. But she's piping up again to say, you know, we should back whoever the nominee is.
Exactly.
Calm down.
It wasn't just that Bernie, there's some talk about whether he actually had the control to say, look, I'm throwing my support to Hillary and you should too, whether he had the control. But he waited way past the time when he could not win to stay in the race and to still fan the flames. And yes, there is bitterness about that. And there is concern that he'll do it again this time.
Well, if he doesn't do it this time,
Libby.
Well, no, I just people need
you
to
finish that. Alan?
People need to make a decision as to whether or not they want 4 more years of Trump, and if they do, then do something stupid, and if they don't, then you vote for the Democratic nominee because
Period.
No matter who we get from the Democratic side, we'll be 1,000 times better than what we have now, and we'll have a chance to save the Republic and maintain the Constitution. You know, the farce that's going to start tomorrow, the Senate trial, is a total, you know, disregard of the Constitution and a disregard of what it means to take an oath. And this is what has to stop.
I would say well put, Libby.
Thank you, dear.
Yeah. Yep, agree.
Okay, Margarita says, on Bernie as a candidate, Bernie is diametrically opposed to everything about Trump, yet speaks to all the same issues. He has the record, the base, the movement behind him. I met Republicans who say they would have voted for him in November 2016. So it's one of the things I keep thinking about. Read the New York Times dual endorsement. Apparently this esteemed paper was unable to distinguish between two female candidates.
Oh, that's
kind regards, and that's from a woman, Margarita.
Yeah, Margarita. I like your name, but that is not true. They did a woman moderate, and they did a woman progressive, and both were in very appreciative terms. And I don't think it was like they couldn't tell one for the other or pick one over the other.
No, they showed the differences between
choices.
The two.
Yeah.
Well,
I disagree with that.
I still take you back to the last line, which said, "May the better woman win." I think the Times was basically endorsing the fact that we ought to have a woman president.
Yep.
Okay, I'm not opposed to that either, but...
Is it just too early, or is there an element of intellectual cowardice here that they don't decide which direction that they would choose the country go?
I think it's too early. I think what they're saying is we need to put a woman in the White House, and that here are the two best choices. You have these two women, and when you look at them, they show the two distinct philosophical sides of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. While they agree on many issues, and, you know, it's about approach. more than anything else. And we have to recognize, as much as some people do not want to believe this, we are a center-right country. That's how Trump got elected. I mean, you know, that's how Bush got elected for 8 years. And on a sense, that's how Obama got elected.
And Clinton.
Obama wasn't out in left field. You know, he just wasn't. And so it's easy for those of us who live in the liberal East Coast and the liberal West Coast to pontificate about how, you know, we need Bernie, we need somebody who's going to tear the house down that way, you know. But the fact of the matter is we need to be able to talk to the middle of the country. We need to talk to Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida. That's where this election is going to be settled.
And not to deviate too much from where we are here, it is Martin Luther King's birthday today.
That's right.
And there was a man who really did understand exactly what you were just saying, Libby.
And was not well liked as a result.
Yeah. But he would say it's not only people of color, but it's people who are poor, for example.
That's right.
And he tried to make that coalition, and that was very dangerous for a lot of people. Probably what got him murdered.
Absolutely.
I have to say, you know, I know we might talk about this later, but I think it's interesting that we're having this white supremacist gun rally in Virginia Beach on Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah, well, that was on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, let's mix up gun rights, people, white supremacists, and let's put them all in the old capital of the Confederacy. That's a great idea.
Let's take a break here. It's the Roundtable Panel. Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post, Sarah Rogerson, Alan Chartok are on the panel today. You can join us. Panel@WAMC.org is the email address. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Monday morning. 9:45 is the time. The Roundtable panel in session. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Sarah Rogerson is here. Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok. The impeachment trial of President Trump will resume this week. May start with a fight over the ground rules. By then, both sides will have submitted briefs, and four Democratic presidential candidates will have been forced back to Washington from the early nominating states to join every other senator in silence on the Senate floor. Trump's lawyers on Sunday previewed their impeachment defense with the assertion that the charges against him are invalid, adopting a position rejected by Democrats as nonsense. Democrats say Trump abused his power and obstructed Congress over his pressure on Ukraine for political help. The Republican president denies doing anything wrong. It begins tomorrow. Alan.
Well, you know, I think the die is cast. I think that the orders are coming directly from the White House to the cowardly Republican senators who are afraid of losing their positions, and that they are just going to either go down in flames or they will survive. I think they are playing a terribly dangerous game, because whether it's a 12-hour session or not, what's going to end up happening is that people will know that their senators wimped out in key states. We know Colorado is one. We know Maine is another. That's two of the four you need right there.
I don't know that there are people who will see it as wimped out. I wish that were true, but they see it as standing in support of the president. And while we don't agree with that, Coloradoans, Maine's, a lot of people in Maine do see this as Kentucky and definitely see it as.
I agree with you that a lot of people.
They see it as a principled stand.
The question is not a lot of people. The question is, what about the people, the purples? What about the people who are independent voters? I think it could hurt him. It could hurt, for example, Colorado quite badly. And I think Susan Collins may have finally come to the point.
I do, too. I think she's done. I think she's toast.
Well, and we already saw that. I mean, Lindsey Graham most recently.
And he might be toast, too.
Yeah. Well, and he backed off. He said that it was that they didn't have the votes to dismiss it outright. And that was there for a week and a half. That's what they were saying. We're going to dismiss this case. We're going to dismiss this case. Bring over the articles. We're going to dismiss it. And he's backed way off of that. Well, like, that's not even on the
credit
table.
Credit Nancy Pelosi for that change instead. Well, there's so much more evidence now. It's hard to do it.
And you have to wonder whether or not the timing of the Lev Parnas, Rachel Maddow interviews and all the stuff that they sent over with the articles of impeachment, because everybody thought, oh, it's over, you know, her game, it didn't work, you know, and then this happens.
And so. I'm willing to bet that more is coming.
Me too.
I think
we haven't even heard from Igor. I mean, he's another person. We have not heard a thing from him. That's interesting.
That's the Parnas's
Yeah, Parnas's partner. And Giuliani has not testified to anywhere.
He's going to lie through his teeth.
Well, yeah, the Southern District, though, is
so in the meantime, we have Dershowitz.
Oh, yeah. Can we talk about Dershowitz for a minute? Explain this to me. Lawrence Tribe, who is another Harvard constitutional lawyer, the same kind of credentials, same exact credentials, actually, as Dershowitz. And he said, he's crazy. He just said it right out. There's no way this is legit. So, Sarah, can you make...
on the Harvard faculty together.
Yeah, yeah. That must have been interesting faculty meetings, I think.
They always are.
But is there anything to this at all? He is adamant that there's no way this is an impeachable offense.
He hasn't made his arguments yet in any great detail.
They're expecting it today, I think.
Right. So I've been poking around to sort of, it wasn't in the report that was issued by the other White House lawyers that Dershowitz actually distanced himself from and said, I had nothing to do with that. I didn't write it. He is doing mental gymnastics, sort of the way that Scalia would do in his opinions.
Interesting.
Where he knows he wants to get to a result, but since he can't, he finds a way to compartmentalize everything that doesn't line up with his argument. And I think what he's probably going to do is sort of some textual interpretation of the Constitution to find some technical reason. Remember the other, I don't know, I think it was Yale or Harvard law professor who was saying that Trump hadn't been impeached until the articles had been delivered because of some technical... Right.
Well, remember that Dershowitz has said has been contrary in the past to what he is suggesting right now. I think you're right, Sarah. So in the old days, he was saying you could impeach a president for a non-criminal offense. Now he's saying the exact opposite.
If you look back through Scalia's opinions, he does the exact same thing.
Very interesting.
Yeah. I wonder if he's bucking for a Supreme Court seat.
Oh, my goodness.
God help us all.
I don't think he'd ever survive that. I don't think it would happen. By the way, Dershowitz is sort of my age, isn't he? I mean, he's not a young kid.
And he used to be revered.
Yeah, people thought he was a good guy.
Well, he epitomized that defense lawyer who would defend anybody, which is the American judicial principle, right? Mm-hmm. That anybody's entitled to an expert defense. And he got off Hans von Bülow and O.J. Simpson. He got off, Epstein. He's sort of involved with the whole pervy connection between these guys.
I didn't take my underwear
these
off
guys.
When he got when he got a massage.
Really?
That's what he said.
Really?
I didn't take
Thank
my
you,
underwear
Libby.
Off. It's like, oh, my God.
Okay, but my favorite stand of the weekend was Pence writing a letter to the editor, an op-ed, about it was addressed to Democrats in the Senate, exhorting them to be brave, like, I forgot the name of the guy, the one Democrat, the one
Jersey.
Senator who voted, who got Andrew Johnson off the hook. And then all the historians have come out and said, that was kind of not like a principled stand. It wasn't courage. He was bribed. They gave him money to change his vote. Oh, my God. And that's who Pence is saying, all you Democrats be like that.
And I didn't read it, but I read something else from the Kennedy kids, the grandkids. I guess he invoked profiles in courage or something like that.
Yeah, that's what he was telling them. Be courageous, do the right thing, defend the president.
Right, and the Kennedy grandchildren were like, how dare you?
I bet it was dictated from the White House, the op-ed.
Oh, the op-ed, I'm sure. I'm sure Pence didn't write it.
Meanwhile, if witnesses are allowed, Ted Cruz says could be 6, could be 8 weeks, could be a long trial.
He's
that's
full
okay
of
by me.
That's all right.
No, I think that's total garbage.
What they're going to do?
Really?
If they
have witnesses, it'll still be a 2 week trial.
They can do it in 2 weeks. Yeah, I mean, think about the House. How many witnesses were there that was wrapped up in a week and a half, 2 weeks?
I think his pronouncement was to discourage Democrats from pushing this because he's saying we'll bring in the whole Hunter Biden thing. We'll ask for Schiff to come and Pelosi and Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, and then we'll all fight this in the courts about whether they'll come or not. And they're gonna. He's saying we can drag this out too.
Well, and
it's a threat.
I think it's also a voice to his own party saying you guys want to get some other things accomplished before we lose the presidency.
Well, they're also
and we only have so much time. And do you want to be tied up? And do you want to be tied up in a hearing, right? Because the House has been passing stuff left and right. The Senate's got to fight over it. It's going to suck up a lot of airtime to have the trial. So I think he's also sending a message to
his
own people.
I sort of don't understand why that is. How is the House able to pass all those bills that they did? They did all the bulk of the work on the impeachment up to this point. So why is it the Senate can't do that, too?
There's fewer of them.
Because they don't want to.
Exactly, Libby. They don't want to.
They just don't want to.
Yeah, but what's the advantage to them, Libby, of not doing it?
Because they are being told from the White House that this is Trump stood up before that before his acolytes the other night or last night and said, "I do all these wonderful things." I hope the Washington Post added another line, you know, to the lies. And all I do is get impeached for it, and gets a huge hand for that.
But hasn't Pelosi and the Democrats made the point that we've got 300 bills sitting on?
Oh yeah,
on,
they keep doing so graphics and photos.
So why are they going along with it? Why are they not passing stuff?
I think part of it is that they can't vote on some of these issues because they would have to vote them down, and it would be and their no votes would be used against them in November.
Correct. It's always been so in the New York State Legislature when the Republicans had the Senate the Assembly kept passing bills. They weren't going to get passed.
But this makes you hate politics. Hear this stuff? That's just terrible.
Well,
many of these are bipartisan bills that are not even controversial. They just need to be done. The business of government.
But does it make a tangible difference in the world if they're done now or 6 months from now? A year from now.
I'm just telling you, y'all, that they're not going to get done. They're not going to pass those bills.
It took 10 years to get the farm workers bill passed in New York. It took 20 years for I forget which else. But, you know, it takes time. And politics have to align. And I think they'll be aligned next year.
Look, McConnell is calling the shots here. And what we are hearing leaked out in the past several hours, two 12-hour sessions and goodbye. They don't want it any more than that. The minimum they can possibly have is what they want. They got to give their people some space. And that's going to be a problem. In other words, the vulnerable Republicans are going to be causing a certain amount of trouble here.
When is the State of the Union?
It's supposed
first
to be
week in February.
Yeah, February 4th.
If this trial is still going on, then that will be an extra surreal experience.
Oh yes, that's why they said they want to wrap it up before then.
Actually, what Lindsey Graham said was the president's mood. Can you imagine if they said that about a woman in the White House? The president's mood is that he wants this wrapped up before his State of the Union. Address.
The idea of saying that about any president, man or woman.
Yeah. The mood of the president.
If we're going to talk about that, the archives, that's on our
list. Is it okay? We have about 2 minutes before the news if you want to do a setup for that. Go ahead, set it up there, kid.
Okay, so a Washington Post reporter goes to the archives, and he notices this strange thing. It's a picture advertising a display about suffrage, and it's tied in with the women's marches of the past week. And what he sees when he looks in the picture is that all the signs that women carry, many of them are profane, many of them are anti-Trump, and they're blurred. You can't read them all. So he goes back to the office and looks at the original, and the original is complete and clear as it can be. And it turns out he investigates. The archives has altered the photos, the photographic evidence. This is the National Archives, which is supposed to keep the historic record. They have altered the pictures because they say, one, it would change the focus from the record itself to a partisan argument. And two, because some of the words were like vagina and pussy, and those are not words that should be on a display, even though our president talks about them.
So I think they also made the argument that this was a promotional display too. That,
not the actual photo.
That the photo that is in the archives itself is not altered. I'm not making excuses.
No, that was their third explanation.
Their last one, right?
Then people were going nuts, including me. I was on Facebook all over with that. I said, can you believe this? And they said, oops, we made a mistake. And it still needs to be done. Like, had they done this before? Are there procedures in place to make sure it doesn't happen again? And it's just horrible.
Well done. Well, good job. In 1 minute and 30 seconds, Rosemary Armeo encapsulates the whole thing. It's the roundtable panel, and only just a couple of off-color words. Well done. Sarah Rogerson, Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok here. It's the roundtable panel. You can email us, panel@wamc.org. We'll get more of your emails coming up. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Monday morning, 10:05. Every now and then, a listener will write in and say, you know, you really ought to record your conversations during the break and make them into Fun Drive premiums. I got news for you. This one will never see the light of day, okay? Just so you know. This is the
What did you say about Gwen's PayPal?
You have daughters.
Oh, I do have daughters.
Yeah, I mean,
that
and
I got.
A wife. Yeah, this is not new stuff for you.
No, I got a son, too.
Just one.
One son, four daughters. That's right.
I kept trying. Is he the youngest?
No, he's the oldest.
Oh. Okay.
Sarah Rogerson's here, Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. You can join us by emailing us at panel@wamc.org. Best read some letters there, sir.
I will do what you say.
All right.
Nancy says, Bernie, dear panel, Bernie was an excellent chief executive as mayor of Burlington. He's changed the debate because he's got the best policies in capital letters. I believe the right woman can win, but it's not Warren or Klobuchar who aren't the same as each other and not the same as Bernie. Saying their policies are similar is a compliment to Bernie, whose policies are popular. I think Libby and Rosemary are just as sexist in the implicit misandrist way as so many of us are in a misogynistic way. The candidate's sex should be considered last. The vast majorities don't care about the New York Times endorsement. Thank you for Nancy. Now, that's the second letter.
Who was the signature on that?
Nancy.
Okay. From a woman.
Self-hating woman.
I think the last one was Margarita. But what's interesting about that is, obviously, we have never had a woman president in the United States.
Yeah, because India has every time we always say, not that woman. Yeah. No, not Hillary. No, yeah. not Warren.
So I just think it is about being a woman, and it is a sexist country, and we have got to do something about this. Okay, in any case, Vincent says, comment. The fact that someone is fixed and immovable in their beliefs is exactly why they should not be a leader. When I was elected as the first Democratic leader in my community, one of the best lessons I learned is that once you get elected, you represent all of the people, not just the people who supported you. A lesson Trump and perhaps Bernie has yet to learn.
I don't know. I think an earlier listener made the point that Bernie has done there are things that Bernie has done that have been collaborative and reaching across the aisle and whatnot. Yes. I think it's definitely in his skill set. He's not running on it, though. So, I mean, that's the problem. We'll see how his campaign responds over the next weeks and months.
Russ says, the sad facts. There are only a few undecided states in the electoral contest for this presidential election. Candidates who cannot tap into the largely conservative, risk-averse values of the working and middle-class voters of those states will see a repeat of 2016, and a tin pot huckster will remain in the White House. The progressive wing of the Democratic Party will have to wait for a bigger demographic shift.
David Axelrod, the Democratic advisor, has tweeted, if I had to choose just one newspaper, it would be the New York Times and the Washington Post.
That's funny. That is really funny. Molly says, Bernie? Hi, panel. And once again, thanks for showing up despite the weather. I admire your tenacity as well as your knowledge and brilliance. I hate to disagree with Alan, but I don't think Bernie Sanders would make a good president. He is an inspiration, a spiritual leader in the rabbinic tradition of a teacher and moral guide. He points us over and over again in the direction we should take. but his uncompromising personality will get in the way of actually getting anything done, is indeed one of those figures from the Old Testament that stiffen their necks and refuse to change no matter what. An admirable trait, but difficulty when trying to legislate, and that's from Molly. So I wanted to disagree with Molly about one thing. Have you been hearing me endorsing Bernie Sanders for president?
No.
No. Okay, thanks. I once voted for him, but that was in a primary a long time ago. Jordan says, compromise is meaningless. Why do you guys care so much about compromise? Obama tried to compromise with Republicans, and they tore him apart over every little thing. The Affordable Care Act has dozens of compromises, but not a single Republican vote. Jordan, in Fort Plain, New York.
Well, there's inter-party compromise, which is what I think we're talking about, compromising with your own caucus, and then there's compromising across the aisle. And those are very different animals, for sure.
And both are needed in effective governance. And we haven't really had it since the Tea Party. The Tea Party was a reaction to Obama, and it, the mainstay of it was, we were elected to do this, and we're going to do this and nothing else. We don't care if the whole house comes down around us. And basically, we've watched that happen to our government. It's now seen as a weakness to give in a little. You see that people were criticizing Democrats for agreeing to more military spending, even though the answer, and I think it was appropriate, was we gave in to more military spending in the last budget agreement in order to get several programs mm-hmm. that the Republicans were going to have nothing to do with. That's a healthy thing when that goes on.
Then Margaret has written, Biden, Klobuchar, Sanders, Warren, alphabetical order only. Which candidate do you each think could actually stand up to Trump's brutal bashing without buckling at the knees? Margaret.
Amy Klobuchar.
All of them.
All of them.
I agree.
All of them. But, you know, it isn't just them. They do have to stand up to Trump, but Democratic supporters have to be behind them and not mm-hmm. let Trump get away with it. He wins not because he wore down Jeb Bush, for example, but because Republicans wavered in their support of Jeb Bush when Trump began calling him sleepy and low energy. That's crazy. And nervous Nancy, does that make you support Nancy Pelosi any the less? We have to be as I think they need the support of Democrats.
I will say, though, I think Warren's campaign has the ability, and they've proven this time and time again over this primary season, of being able to readjust the narrative quickly.
That's true.
And that's what we're fighting over.
That's really strong. That's a good point.
We're fighting over who has the best staff.
Okay, but when you see, you're right. Of course you're right. That's you're standing really up there. And you're debating with this monster.
That's right.
And the question then becomes, what has your staff given you that you can say, you know, and you had better memorize your lines, because that's what standing up to him is going to be. I mean, even to the point with, hey, Mr. Trump, will you please stand where you're supposed to stand and don't come over here. I consider that offensive.
Yeah, and that's what edges Warren over Klobuchar. I mean, given the last debate where Elizabeth Warren had the line of the night.
Yeah,
that
she did.
The only candidates on stage that won 100% of their elections
line.
Were the women.
It was
and Klobuchar couldn't remember her friend's first name.
Yeah, that was bad. But and then also I would add to that Warren stood up to Bernie, who said, I won against an incumbent.
Yeah.
And she goes, yeah, that was like 30 years ago. That's what I said. I mean, and we've seen both of those women in congressional hearings being very strong against people in the wrong. I don't think any of I even don't think Biden would have trouble in a debate against Trump.
No.
If he tried not to be Trump, if he just was himself, because he knows more. He actually knows the stuff.
And had his lines.
Yeah. He needs a different kind of rehearsal, but I think in different ways they all could beat him. I think Buttigieg would kill him because
yep.
he's actually a veteran and not a coward.
And I think I think they could all stand up to him. And
right.
I think what needs to be said over and over and over again is we need an adult in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need somebody who can speak in a simple sentence, who can actually read, and who doesn't resort only to name-calling to make a point.
Right.
You know, we need somebody. So I think we need somebody to push back constantly on Trump's way of doing things and to show him for what he is, which many people know. But it's a way of, I mean, I think Pete Buttigieg talking about what it means to be a Christian. And then the mm-hmm. Christian right pushing against him because he's gay and saying he's not a Christian. And he just pushing right back.
Yep.
That's what we have to do. We have to just push right back and not let up for a minute and not give an inch.
And we've never had an out gay man as president of the United States. So as long as we're talking about things that have never happened, including women, we should include Pete Buttigieg in that conversation as well. Just because he's a white man doesn't mean he doesn't represent an underrepresented group.
Mm-hmm. Keith says the Bernie narrative is wrong. Why does Bernie get all the credit for Medicare for All? Seems like some revisionist history to me. Obama, back in 2009, tried to get Medicare for All except for the traitor, Joe Lieberman, blocking it in the Senate. And they had to compromise on the ACA and the tweak it going forward to cover more Americans. Then Bernie comes along 2016 and acts like Medicare for All is a new concept he invented. Medicare for All has been proposed for decades, but Obama was the closest to achieving it. Not Bernie, and that's from Keith. Okay, no comments.
Rosemary agrees.
Yeah.
No comments.
It's true.
But one of his best lines ever was, I wrote the bill. When Bernie said, I wrote the bill. Hey, I wrote the bill. Kevin says, Bernie-Trump comparison. I'm appalled by the attempt to compare Bernie in any way to Trump. Bernie has made an unwavering commitment to fighting for justice and equity for the American people and has always done so. No matter what Trump says, he'll fight unwaveringly to line his pockets and get reelected so he can continue doing so. Bernie is the most honest and believable candidate based on his record. He is what we need. Pardon me. He's shown he'll keep his promises, stop, however indirectly, trying to talk people out of voting for him. Thanks from Kevin.
I hear you, Kevin, and I don't think that that's what my co-panelists were trying to do in terms of making comparisons about leadership style. But I will say that I did read this tweet caught my eye. It was just a couple days ago by somebody, a reporter, Matt Pierce, who is a national correspondent for the LA Times. And he said, it's hard to overstate how unpredictable talking to voters can be. Melissa from Iowa caucused for Bernie in 2016, then voted for Trump. She supports Medicaid for All, but supports Buttigieg, but will likely vote for Trump again if Buttigieg doesn't win the Democratic nomination.
And that's what's so stupid.
Yeah. And that's I think that sums up your point.
Stupidity.
Well, you can call it stupid, but here's what I'm thinking. As each of, and I may be stupid too, but I think my analysis is that what the American people are looking for is, quote, something different. And so somebody who voted for, you know, somebody who voted for Bernie and then votes for Trump is in that group of looking for something different. And the Democrats ought to recognize that.
And they're probably mostly white, middle and upper middle class people who aren't really being affected by his policy.
Yeah, it looked like this was a straight white woman.
Yeah.
But you know what?
And they're straight, too.
Whether they're white and middle class, they all vote.
I know they
do. And that's terribly important to remember.
But I think that's what's going on here. I mean, you know, they're acting out of their own privilege because are they losing their food stamps? No. Are their kids going to go to war in the Middle East if we...
Okay, Libby. So here's the question. Uh-huh. How about all those people, 50% of the American people who don't vote, most of whom I happen to believe are Democrats, and need the help the most? They need the help with the food, with their kids, and everything else, and they don't vote, which is just as bad as voting for the wrong guy.
Can I ask a question?
No.
Based your belief that they're those who don't vote are mostly Democrats, how do you get that?
I get that because I think that voting has been shown by political scientists and others to be something that the people who – the more healed you are, the more likely you are to vote. And therefore, we know that the Democrats have far fewer people of great means, and therefore, I happen to believe it. Now, we can look it up. I'm sure there have been political science studies on it, but I'm sure I'm right.
But well, that's why we're going to see a major grassroots effort.
Yes.
That's already started.
We already have. Michelle Obama's flagship campaign right now is voter registration.
I mean, it's voter reg, and it's turning those people out to vote.
And it won't be the first time that the Democrats have tried that, and in some cases, to no avail whatsoever. And that's very sad.
Well, we'll see.
And I guess we're talking about the difference between people who are registered D Democrats versus independents who probably harbor Democratic values that align with the mm-hmm. Democratic Party. So that's why those political science reports are and studies are difficult to pin down, too.
Well, yes, I suppose.
There also are powerful repressive forces on voting, too, that mm-hmm. A drive doesn't actually get on. You can go and register to vote, but how are you going to get out of work to go vote on a Tuesday? Or
at a polling place that's 15 miles away from
exactly,
you.
Exactly, and there's no public transport. Right. It's things that, or you're old, or, you know, they're just...
Or you're a student, and there's no polling place on your campus.
Right, yeah. Right.
Or when you get there, the lines are around the block because it's understaffed.
And you have a class coming up. You know, you just don't. You just say, okay, well, it won't make a difference in just one vote. It's just so easy not to vote.
Okay, so Jody writes, Salad Comb. Hello, panel. Klobuchar's frustration with presumably well-educated paid staff members for forgetting her cutlery when tasked to grab her a salad and subsequently improvising with a comb from her purse is a positive. And she's expecting the best and improvises and sounds off when she doesn't get it. Sounds like a great leader to me.
Well, she ate salad with a comb, and so yeah. She's a great leader.
Well,
so that's a leap.
That was used against her. That was used against her. That well, she was crabbing at a staffer who didn't serve her well. It's
I think leadership really means that you don't abuse your staff.
Yes, agree.
I think it's probably true that the people who listen to WAMC know that I do not do that with our staff. And that's just the way it is. You've got to respect people. And if somebody doesn't, I think it counts against you. And I'm not saying that in order to demolish Klobuchar by any means. I just think that's the point.
There was the famous photograph of Obama who didn't think that the White House photographer was around and greeted the janitorial staff of the White House, I think, upon first taking office.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Cory Booker, who bowed out last week, but also one of the things that he has said regularly throughout his career is that you can tell a lot about a person by how they treat the wait staff when you mm-hmm. have dinner with them.
Sure.
Absolutely.
So those are, I mean, that's not his saying, but, you know, he's one of the people who has made it popular in political discourse.
I knew a guy who knew Jesse Unruh very well. He worked for him. And we had dinner one night with a whole bunch of people, important people, and he sent back 9 bottles of wine.
Oh, please.
9 bottles.
He better be a sommelier, because I can't, I mean, 9, how do you tell the difference?
I don't.
So, in other words, he didn't like them and sent them back?
Yes.
After they were opened?
Yes.
Oh, that's not nice.
No. Okay, and Jason said, did we read this one?
Not yet.
I don't think so. Women are certainly judged differently than men with so-called aggressive behavior. But with Klobuchar, it seems she is particularly abusive to underlings and a punch-down bully. It is well known from academics.
Have you been there? Did you see it?
What'd you say?
To the reader, have you seen it? Or is it
just
conjecture?
What you're saying, yeah. Okay. It is well known from academic studies that browbeating subordinates does not get good results, and her form of management style shows a deep-seated contempt for people of lower social status, no matter how much she says she is for the underdog. You know, one of the things I found when I worked in Congress, and Ed Koch is a pretty good example of this, was that the conservative members of Congress were nice to everybody.
Yes.
And they were just nice to everybody. And they treated everybody with great respect. They voted wrong. They were terrible in what they brought the country
when
to.
When was this? Which decade of Republicans are we talking about?
1912.
The 80s, 70s, 80s?
All I know is that when my boy was working for Kennedy as an intern, he came to the elevator, and staff only, and one of those guys, one of the real conservative guys, says, "Come on in, boy. There's always room for one more." Now, that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. Okay, so anyway, Jason said that. Joni says, Times endorsement. Isn't the New York Times endorsement as much a non-endorsement of Mike Bloomberg as anything else? Joni in Athol.
Well, one of the things that Libby and I were talking about is that even the people they did not pick, they were not trashed. And for Bloomberg, mm-hmm. they talked about his governance experience, his abilities, but then acknowledged, yeah, he's buying the election. He's not playing by the games. And Buttigieg, they talked about, we're going to see him in the future. He's got lots of smarts. He just has no experience. Yang, they talked about his very out-of-the-box thinking, that was refreshing. Oh, it didn't trash or put down, I think, any of the candidates,
Would you vote for Bloomberg with a chance?
If Bloomberg is the candidate from the Democratic Party, I will be voting for him.
Yeah,
agree.
I think. I hate to say it, that Bloomberg, whether he's trying to buy it or not, he certainly has the money to do that. Is going to be a good president.
I think he'd be a very good president. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to run things.
The New York Times said that he brings all the stuff that Trump said he was going to bring to the White House. I mean, he's an actual legitimate deal maker and businessman.
Yeah. And Frank says, impeachment trial. If the senators running against Trump recuse themselves, they would avoid the appearance of a conflict of interest and allow for campaigning during the trial. Thanks, Frank from New Jersey. But I'm going to tell you something. I don't think they have that option. I think they have to be there, and I think they have to be in their seats, and I don't think they can do that. Maybe I got that wrong, but that's the impression I was getting.
New Jersey, huh?
Frank from New Jersey. He writes us often.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe from Sussex. You know, Sussex is at the sort of northern end of New Jersey. I know that because I went to Camp Sussex. I was a counselor there, a camp that I detest.
How many camps have you been to?
Oh, my God. Yeah, his parents didn't want him at home ever.
You know, they just kept throwing him out, so they had to find a new one.
Yeah.
Well, I lived in Essex County for 4 years and Hudson County for 2. So.
Yeah, and you have lived everywhere, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about Michigan today.
Not today.
All right. Well, there's still time for Fire Island and Michigan. We'll get them in the last half hour of the program.
Susan, campaign and impeachment. I'm very disappointed that the Democratic campaign is not being suspended while the impeachment is being held. Mm. This is an extremely important part of our democratic process and a serious problem in our country today. And that is where our focus needs to be and capitalize at this time. Going out and campaigning takes away from the severity of the charges against the president of the U.S. If they do, talk about the process and why. Well, wait a second now. Mitch McConnell is handling this. He's the guy who's making all these decisions. And he's taking his orders. Guess from who?
Donald
Trump does not want an extended process. He wants this over and done with, and McConnell is going to accommodate him. It's that simple.
All the candidates have said that they will be in the Senate where they are required by their oath to be, and that, yes, it might hurt them, but there's no choice in this. And
which is really just the votes, because none of the senators who are campaigning sit on relevant committees. Booker's on Judiciary, and so was Kamala, but they're both out.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Good point. Susan says, campaign and impeachment. I'm very disappointed that the Democratic campaign is not. Oh, we did that one. Thank you very much for that, Sarah. Sarah let me know in a surreptitious way that I was making a jerk of myself reading it a second time.
We all tried.
Sarah, can you stay the whole week?
It was.
Rita says, OJ. Dershowitz's association with OJ will hurt Trump in public opinion. We all know that O.J. got away with murder. So what does that make Trump? Thank you, Rita, but I don't agree with you. I think this guy does whatever he wants. The base applauds him.
I think the base, if you polled the base, they would agree that O.J. was innocent, too.
Yeah.
Do you?
I do.
Well, and more importantly is the prosecution was not effective against O.J. He deserved the acquittal he got. And so Dershowitz, for that, he gets high marks from me for that.
But, I mean, Dershowitz was a defense or is a defense attorney, right?
Correct.
And a part of that job is you defend tough cases, right? So, and he was just part of that team.
I'm the only one in this room who knows Dershowitz.
He
was in my house.
Really?
He sat there. He told the story.
Did you go to camp together?
No. No. But he did go out. He did go out for a long time, like 12 years, with one of my best friends. And every once in a while, I'll ask her. She'll basically say, go away.
What would you ask?
I'd say, well, how does that feel, you know, to have had to do with Dershowitz for that long?
Blue blazes? What?
Is she like 24?
Over now? Decades.
No.
Is she a young girl?
No.
He likes them, I hear.
I shudder to think of what people 20 years ago are going to do with their lives.
We got about 15 seconds here, sir, and then we'll take a break.
Teresa, off-color words. Hi, panel. I adore Ray, so I hope he doesn't include the word vagina when he mentioned that only a couple of off-color words were said.
That was not one of the words, by the way.
Vagina is no more off-color than words such as elbow, eyelid, and heel.
Agreed.
Because they're all body parts. There's no shame
that
in using correct terminology. Love you all. Teresa in Saugerties.
Well, we put the recording out for the Fun Drive Premium. You'll find out. Let's take a break here. The email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We will have more panel for you right after this. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's 10:34. It's a Monday morning, and boy, it feels like a Thursday. Alan and I are already arguing. It's you know, the week starts fast.
Well, that's what happens with old married couples.
You know that. You know, I think you are onto something there. Libby Post is here. Rosemary Armeo, Sarah Rogerson, the aforementioned Shartok. Email address is panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. More lettuce. More lettuce.
More lettuce and tomato. And red onion.
Happy MLK Day. Can someone on your savvy panel kindly hazard a guess as to when, in capital letters, the Southern District of New York is likely to turn in their long-awaited decisions, one that could put at rest once and for all the extent to which Trump, Giuliani, and the whole festering crew has undermined our republic? Thank you from Annie.
No, but I can tell you where to look.
Okay.
Pacer is the place to look for the Northern District of New York. It costs a little bit of money. There's been a lot of folks have complained, rightly so, that it blocks access because you have to pay per page of document. But you can look at a docket report on Pacer and see where in the litigation all those cases
Pacer?
Are. It's run by the court system, the federal court system. Yeah.
There's been some interesting things, Sarah, maybe you can talk about, on whether Barr has a lot of control over the pre-Prar replacement in the Southern District and whether he is controlling, for example,
exactly.
Why doesn't Lev Parnas have a immunity agreement with all that information that he has that he's been sharing? Why isn't there an agreement? And the speculation is, and it could be just more conspiracy theory, that Barr is stopping it.
Well, that's possible. But Sarah, you would be able to tell us, doesn't the Congress have the right to give immunity for testimony?
I actually don't know the answer to that.
I think the answer is yes.
It's interesting. Those types of things don't necessarily make it out into the public all the time. So he may have something in place and we just don't know about it.
That's interesting.
Because this just broke on Thursday.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. And Allison says, New York Times endorsement. I'm so sorry your women panelists are talking about personality. You're not sufficiently scared of Trump. You say he's the same as Bernie. You and the New York Times want Trump to win? I get it for the New York Times. Trump has been great for subscriptions. Do you have kids? Do you care about the environment, war, immigrants? All the policies that Trump espouses? Alan, please save this show this morning.
Huh? Oh,
I have great...
That is deep.
We're in trouble.
Great
yeah.
respect for my colleagues. Great respect. And I've been following along, and while I don't always agree with everything that everybody says. I do think you guys are terrific. I just want to say that.
Well, there's no love of Trump here, and right. nor is anything yeah. any of us said has been to his blandishment, his encouragement. The latest cruel thing he did, we've not mentioned it, was he's rolling back Michelle Obama's very wise lunch programs, because kids should eat more French fries and potatoes. But not just that he did it, okay? You know, that's his right, yeah. But he did it on her birthday. He's just an evil, venal little jerk.
Okay, and then we heard from Lou, who said, Bernie, enough of Rosemary's Bernie bashing. Bernie has integrity and inspires loyalty. Hillary had major baggage, favored military interventions and compromised democracy for the status quo in Central America, etc. Remember, the DNC unfairly swayed the primary toward Hillary.
Blah, blah, blah.
pre-informing her of debate questions, not Bernie, etc. Major polls show Bernie more decisively beating Trump, not so much for Hillary. Now, in capital letters, we have Trump.
Except that Hillary did beat Trump by 3 million votes. It came down to 70,000 votes in a handful of states for the electoral college, not acted as he did.
I mean, I think Comey is to blame for what happened to her and the Russians. But Bernie, you know, the Bernie supporters like to say, oh, Hillary has baggage and ran a bad campaign. But one of the things that ran against her was Bernie Sanders. And there's no way around that. So don't go telling me that I got you Trump.
I like it. Don't go telling. I like that. The idiom. Don't go telling me. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you for that. Susan writes, the problem with both Clinton and Warren, yes, a woman can be elected president, but most Americans dislike, and this is in capital letters, the smartest girl in the room.
Yep.
I understand that you think the U.S. should be less sexist, but is it?
No.
Will nominating a woman twice in a row make it less so?
No.
Can you honestly say that Elizabeth Warren is a more electable candidate than Sanders? And that's from a female Yang supporter in parentheses, and that's from Susan.
I so wish I could be alive 150 years from now to see.
Alan will be.
Yeah.
If he keeps walking the way that he does.
Did you guys see Mrs. Yang's thing? It was very touching,
I thought,
in which she talked about sexual abuse and what had happened to her.
By a gynecologist.
I didn't think it was designed, by the way, to be politically helpful. I just think she had to do it. She did it. And Kim says, presidential debates. Does the panel think that Trump will actually agree to debating? I don't think he will. Makes the question of who can stand up to Trump on TV moot. Opinions. And that's from Kim in Red Hook.
This has been interesting. A lot of listeners have been writing and saying, no, he'll never debate. You know, and if he thought about it, if he listened to advisors, I think you're right. But Trump does things on impulse. He likes being the center of attention, mm-hmm. and he thinks he is the best. So I just can't conceive of him saying, no, I'm not going to debate anybody.
I agree with you. And he did it the last time.
Yeah. I mean, Hillary beat him.
The thing about people who politicians are, they tend to replicate what worked for them in the past. And I think that's the case. Although if he did cut out, he would say the whole thing is rigged and therefore I'm not going to do it. He'll make a demand that is not doable. Okay, so anybody else on that? No. And then we heard from Adam. Presidential first. Dear panel, yes, we've never had a woman president or an out gay man. But we've also never had a Jewish president. Bernie would be the first as well. And that's Adam in Monterey, Massachusetts.
That's totally a fair point.
What'd you say?
That's a totally fair point.
Earl says, stupid. Libby called a writer stupid. When one repeatedly screams stupid, they themselves do not understand. I pray that those screaming stupid find better focus or we revisit a disappointment in November.
Yeah, I know we're supposed to be nice, but it's really hard not to scream stupid over and over again the last 3 years.
Debating Trump, says Mary. To Trump supporters, it doesn't matter how good a debater his opponent is. Trump's force of personality and his outright willingness to lie about his own accomplishments will, quote, win against any of the Democratic nominees. Frightening. And that's from Mary in Pittsfield.
You know, they're going to have to close those debates to a live studio audience because I just can't imagine people not guffawing in laughter at half the stuff he's going to claim in these debates. It's going to be loud. I don't know how they're going to do crowd control at all.
Well, Catherine says, voting. Some people unwittingly signed up for the Independence Party, thinking they were declaring they were independents. An intentional ruse to confuse. Also, there are lots of early voting dates available now in New York. Let me just say that in Massachusetts, where I live, you don't register as an independent. That is a party. You register as unenrolled.
Right.
And then you can take I love it. Because you can take a ballot in either party.
And you can do that in New York, too. But people really thought,
no, you cannot vote in both parties.
No. I mean, you can do unenrolled and OP.
Yeah, but
in
what
New
you
York.
Can't do is what we have in Massachusetts,
no,
which
you
allow
cannot.
You to vote in either primary.
Right.
Okay. Okay, so then...
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Libby.
If you're not a member of the party, you don't get to vote.
It makes sense, right?
Yep.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't.
If you join a bowling league, if you're not in the bowling league, you can't vote for the leadership of the bowling league, right? I mean, doesn't it make sense to you? If you're in the thing, then you can vote.
No, it doesn't. Okay, Frank writes, Bloomberg. I think Michael Bloomberg is the only candidate that can stand up against Trump. He ran the most diverse city in the country. He is the perfect mix of left and right, and he is more intelligent in his pinky than Trump has. I hope Dems get behind him. Okay. Well, there are a lot of people who think that Bloomberg would be a very good president.
I just don't see why he would be better than anybody else who's running.
Well, because he has, as our writer brilliantly points out, he has a lot of experience in governing, running a large, large corporation, something that Americans respect. He's one of the richest guys in the world, and therefore, you know, he wouldn't be learning on the job. That's
I
for
hear
sure.
you. I just don't know how that stacks up against, you know, Elizabeth Warren's long years of service in government. Her
and teaching in a law school like you do.
She was a law professor. She was at times a single mother. Doing all of that. She also, you know, the CFPB, her financial acumen, I think I would love to see her and she, Elizabeth and Mike face off in a debate about economic policy. I think that's just, these are levels of nuance that we don't get to when we talk about, you know, character.
Plus he told his media empire not to cover him.
And
it's kind of a problem for me.
And she
that's so
me.
Strange.
Yeah,
still.
It really is.
So Susan says, divider in chief. It has occurred to me lately that even if Trump, for whatever reason, leaves office, he will keep the position of divider in chief. He'll still be able to afford to do the rallies in which he so revels. He'll still lead those who now support him in white supremacy and hatred of all kinds. So let's get him in an orange jumpsuit. Can he tweet from the big house? Thanks for all you do. The panel means a lot. From Susan.
Can't. It just won't have as much volume. I can't believe that he was tweeting about Second Amendment rights being restricted, specifically with regard to what's happening today in Virginia.
Yeah.
It was completely irresponsible.
Are you afraid about what's going to happen there today?
Terrified.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It just seems so explosive.
Absolutely. And so we've heard from Paul in Albany who says something different. Regarding voters looking for something different, you have to take a serious look at Andrew Yang. Yes. He has virtually all small donations like Bernie. He draws from progressives, moderates, libertarian conservatives, and ex-Trump voters across the board. He has very high positive voter opinions, very low negatives, and has steadily growth during the entire year of public attention, unlike others who have fluctuated. Many polls are based on likely Democratic voters. Many of his supporters are independents and first-time voters, so he really deserves a serious look besides how thorough and grounded he is on the data and policy initiatives over 150. Thanks for a great show, Paul in Albany.
I was thinking about how the Republicans under Trump, his opponents became cabinet officers, and how cool it would be if the Democrats came in, if you had, instead of Ben Carson and Rick Perry, you had Andrew Yang and Pete Buttigieg and Kamala Harris and Cory Booker.
A true team of rivals.
Yeah. I mean, it all of them have strengths. And
stellar ideas.
Unusual ideas that the country needs.
Oh, it's good that you said that.
Yeah. I mean, while we bemoan frequently here that we can't seem to get in one package the magical persona that would guarantee us a win over Trump, there's lots of strength on that bench that are running.
Now, Kathy says, we have to hurry because we're almost done, right?
You got a couple of minutes, Daddy-O.
We do. Oh, then I'll go a little slower.
Hurry up.
Kathy says, voter registration and participation. Here's my fantasy. Uh-oh. Get ready with it. Michael Bloomberg drops out of the race and uses his billions of dollars to launch voter registration drives. Get out the vote drives, including fleets of Uber, Lyft cars to bring voters to the polls, especially in areas suffering from voter suppression, inaccessible polling places, etc. Pays reimbursement for people who would lose money from work if they take time out to vote. There are a million things he could do with his billions. Thanks for all you do. P.S. That's Kathy from Liberty. I agree with Rosemary that the kerfuffle between Elizabeth and Bernie was purely self-serving media opportunity to foment conflict. And by the way, Michael Bloomberg has said that he's going to use his money if he doesn't get the nomination to do much of what you've said in this letter. Yeah,
well, he already has done that, yeah, in fact, before he ran.
So. All right, 1 minute exactly.
Okay, well, I'll do it in a minute. All okay. Right. Amy Kay says, I agree with Rosemary, who just tried to make the point that unless we know the context of Amy Klobuchar's treatment of her staff, it would be wise not to speculate. Amy is an excellent vote-getter, prosecutor, and pragmatist. Let's give her a chance. She has not received the media attention she is due. I do agree that good leaders treat their staffs well. And Mike says, good morning, panel. Does anyone else see the irony in the gun, quote, nuts, protesting their rights on the day we celebrate the life of a man,
yes,
whose,
yes,
life ended
we
with
certainly
a bullet?
Do.
Mike in,
yep,
Saratoga Springs.
Yep.
All right, that's where we will leave it today. Thank you all for being here. Albany Law Professor Sarah Rogerson, political consultant Libby Post, investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Thank you all for listening. Now, there is more roundtable ahead. In fact, coming up in just moments, Alan will be in the Congressional Corner with Vermont Representative Peter Welch. It's coming up.